Hello, welcome to The Price of Football, the show that follows the money behind a beautiful game. I'm Kevin Day, and the brains of the outfit, of course, is football finance expert Kieran Maguire. Kieran, hello.
Very good, thank you, Kevin.
I didn't ask you, I said hello. You feel free to answer any questions. You are the brains of the outfit, it turned out. Looking forward to Selhurst Park on Monday night,
the
biggest derby in European football.
Some of our top boys will be there, and some of your top boys will be there as well, no doubt.
Most of our top boys are still banged up after the last time we played each other. Coming up on The Price of Football, we're joined by an actual football scout, which is very exciting, to tell us how it works and what it costs, plus the latest at Macclesfield and Bolton, neither of which is good news, unfortunately. Fresh scandal at the FA of Ireland, which my extended family are obviously very interested in, and was Amazon amazing, to paraphrase Gary Lineker's terrible joke. I used to write for Gary Lineker. I used to write his ad-libs on a lot of things. and then they took the stabilisers off his bike and off he went, writing his own. The trouble is, when he does his terrible ad-libs, I get tweets from friends going, did you write that? I made it up. First, I'm very pleased. Darren Robinson has joined us. Hello, Darren. How are you?
Yeah, very well. Thank you. Thanks for the invite.
You were former head of recruitment at Birmingham City.
Correct.
Forest and Hull and Huddersfield you also worked at. You worked for the FA. Yeah. And now you set up a thing called iScout. It's all a long way from the traditional image that our generation has of a taciturn, miserable old man sitting at a non-league ground writing stuff on a notebook, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not necessarily changed that much. There are still examples of the old-fashioned scouting that's taken place, but the transfer market and recruitment of players has become an industry within the industry. And, you know, invariably we've recognised something, having been in a club situ, about certain gaps within the market that we feel, or certainly from a personal point of view now, it's time to try and turn my hand to something a bit different.
How much do clubs spend on scouting, and is it enough?
We're hugely, hugely varied, and actually too much.
Oh, really?
Yeah, for me...
I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, the industry's broken. So 99% of scouting trips lead to a no. So our disruptive model is to say, why are you wasting all that money on sending scouts? Outsource. It's like a Netflix model, really. So we're going for a subscription-based model to help the clubs to gather information rather than just sending the scouts randomly to football matches to come back and go, there was no one there, Gaffer. So, and I've been obviously a key stakeholder that's seen that happen firsthand.
So scouts are not then going to look at individual players? When you say 99% of scouting missions don't work?
We can scaffold it up. I think in the first instance, a lot of scouting departments aren't held accountable. That's because, the way that the volatility and the fragility for a football manager, all he's ever focused on is winning. So who line manages them? Is there a connection between the recruitment department and what the manager actually wants? And we're seeing a series now of cottage industries develop, certainly within some of the bigger clubs, where they're building departments and recruitment activities that actually might have a disconnect with the football club. In the lower leagues, and we've experienced this firsthand in meeting and visiting clubs, certainly in League One and League Two, they have no scouting infrastructure at all.
At all?
At all. And I think some of the things that we're certainly seeing in social media, I think we've got to be really careful in terms of breaking down the difference between a myth, marketing, and obviously education and actually what is really happening. Having come out of the industry for the last two or three years, I've immersed myself very much in the digital tech world in terms of understanding advanced analytics. And actually, football is very much in the dark ages in terms of the way that it operates. And it's still very much, the guy in the stand. But even now, he's having significantly less influence on getting transfers done because of the influence of agents. And obviously, you've had Jonathan on in previous shows.
Yeah. That disconnect you mentioned earlier on, explain a little bit what you mean by that.
Right, so if we go back historically, so if we go back to, say, the early 90s, so when, or 2000, so when I started at Coventry, Peter Reid was the gaffer. He was the gaffer. He was the manager, and we would, it would be a hierarchical process. So he would have line managed myself as a fitness coach at that period of time. He line managed his assistant manager, and he'd line manage his chief scout. Now, who line manages a chief scout? Because now we've got sporting directors that are appointed and are held accountable to maybe the board of director or the owner. And actually, we're now seeing the titles head coach. So Graham Potter's role at Brighton would be to be the head coach, possibly. And one of my roles in the past at other clubs has
been... Just for the record, Darren looked at Kieran there. because he's a Brighton fan.
Yeah, you can see his pain.
Also, just for the record, you may have heard a hum coming in because we're in a different environment today. We're in the Comedy Store dressing room. So that's not Kieran humming. It's some kind of air conditioning going on. Sorry to interrupt you, but... Yeah.
No, I think that there's been a number of things that have occurred from that. So we may get onto like the Bolton situation a little bit later Pete, the key stakeholders at clubs can personally benefit from deals. People can get involved in deals at the expense of the club. So as we've seen at Bolton, I'm not saying there was any to and fro, and although you gave example of, I think, the chairman's son.
The chairman's son got £125,000 from the club for... something
as a scouting fee. I think you mentioned Mrs. Ince.
Well, that was at Derby. Yeah, Mrs. Ince was an academy scout for on that. She was on $700,000. Yeah.
So I keep my nose clean because you've said it. So we are now seeing that actually there's that type of activity is actually occurring. Some of the owners have gone, the manager can't pick players. All I want him to do is coach. So therefore, they've appointed somebody to actually do that as a role. And then I think also what we've seen in terms of the economical and social change within the game is that in the 90s, we were all signing pretty much on the British Isles. Yeah, now it's become a global aspect. Yeah. So therefore, the scouting reach and activity has meant that actually it's absolutely impossible for a manager to go and watch that player in Argentina because he's got a job to do on a Saturday.
But will a club, say like Palace or Brighton, will they have people on the ground in African countries, in South American countries? Will they have people out there?
Quite likely, yeah. Mourinho, for example, I can use him as an example because he went in the press and spoke about his 60 full-time scouts at Manchester United.
60?
60.
Full-time?
Full-time, right. Yeah. I can come back to that in terms of accountabilities.
Yeah.
There's a club that we're working with in confidence at the minute. They've got 60 full-time. Colombia, Brazil, Brighton, obviously recruited from Argentina. Yeah. Took McAllister, but put him back out on loan on there. Yeah, they will have some full-time scouts. Now, what we've experienced, even from first-hand, is how do you hold those scouts accountable? How do you know if they're actually going to the match?
Oh.
And for example, if you're going to recruit across south of France, it could be a 17-hour drive. What, on 45 PML? Ka-ching. And we are seeing a series of expense collector scouts that'll do, I do 5 matches a week. Well, of course you do, mate, because you're on 45 PML and you're trying to get to as many games as you possibly can. And they all leave after 7 minutes.
You're taking the romance out of this, you know that, don't you? All the glamour's going out of this now.
I know. Well, because as I say, I think football's broken in that side of things. And as Kieran will confirm, I've upset the industry a bit because I keep taking photos of directors' boxes after 76 minutes when all the scouts have gone.
Oh.
At Sunderland the other week where they've equalised last minute against Coventry and I'm the only scout left.
Really? Well, I want to talk to you a little bit about the lower leagues. But before that, how do you square the circle at somewhere like Palace, for example, when we've got a Conservative manager who wants to bring players in who are experienced and therefore 28, 29. You've got a chairman who wants to bring players in who are 23, 24 so he can sell them on.
Yeah.
You've got a director of football who no one knows exactly what he's doing but obviously has a different agenda. Who's in charge then? Who makes the final decision about players? And is it always financial?
No, it's definitely not all financial, but I think that comes into the play. I think if we're going to classic sales methodology, is who's got the budget, who's got the authority, and is there a need? And I think in terms of what happens, certainly I've experienced it first time, what you're told you're going to do at the start and then when it starts, does it actually happen? And I've definitely experienced that firsthand at a championship club. And also, there is a prevalence within the clubs that they actually not any job descriptions given to the individuals. There's an assumption. So it's an assumption that you're the gaffer, so you pick the players. But where's the assumption in terms of who has the final say on actually the player that comes in? And indeed, you can get the manager resisting a proposition that's been put in from a recruitment department in the same way you can get the recruitment department putting a resistance up to what the manager wants or trying to bring in.
And then, obviously, we're interested in the... I mean, I could talk football with you all day, but we're interested in the finances as much as anything. If you go and see a player, if a player's recommended, and say you go to Fleetwood and you see another Jamie Vardy...
Yeah.
Are you saying to the club, I think this is a good player, but don't pay more than this for him? Or does your job stop when you recommend a player?
Yeah, again, not avoiding it, it can depend. I think if I was to go to Fleetwood to watch that Jamie Vardy, you'd know your budget before you go, and can we reach? The mythology of the Jamie Vardy one going into Leicester was that when he was at Fleetwood, everybody was watching him.
Oh, okay.
That wasn't under the radar, really. I remember seeing him play at Mansfield in the conference, but everybody knew. The one that was under the radar would have seen him at Sheffield Park, Stocksbridge Park Steels. Yeah. So I think that because of the way that the clubs are, and this is what we're saying as a business, is that Why are you going to Everton under-23s when there's 60 clubs there? Free market, open market is already going to dictate that source. And actually, somebody like Jonathan, who you've had on the show, is the minute he generates interest from Birmingham, he's on the phone to Leeds. Can he get interest from Leeds? He's then on the phone into the Premiership. So they raise the market price anyway. And that's pretty much the way that the agent operates. And to put it in its truest form, an agent's a commission seller. So he's trying to drive up his commissions in terms of that player. Interestingly, you've brought up Fleetwood, because one of the things that we do is we study transfer habits, demographics and trends. And Joey Barton's recruited a team to go at it. He hasn't gone for any under 21 players, which if we talk about your triple pay, I think coming up in the show is that he's only borrowed one at under 21 level, and the rest has been 26, 28 year olds that can come in and do a job here and now. And all of the clubs never ever get off that point, even the Premiership clubs. So, you know, Burnley, you know, stay up, 4-4-2, British players, boom, we stay on the here and now. And, don't you know, what are we about as a business? You know, whereas Macclesfield is here and now, can we get a team out on Saturday?
Yeah,
so they're not doing any scouting at all, are they?
Well, while we're at that level, and you said early on that in the two lower divisions, some teams have no scout. How do they find players in if they've got no scouting at all? Is it freelance? Are they?
Yeah, twofold. One could be the manager's network. So, you know, the manager may reflect back on the player. So if you're in League Two, it's highly likely, and we've seen this with some of our trends, is that you'll get a decline in athletes. So players 30, 31 is dropping down the leagues. So that manager may already know who he is. And we know of a National League club that within 9 days of the start of the season did it all through agents. Mm-hmm. And my analogy would be when you're buying a house. You know, if you wanted to buy a house, would you put your trust in one estate agent to give you the best house proposition? No, you should be doing your research, looking at the schools, looking at the environment, looking at, you know, due diligence. And actually we're finding that's not always the case in player recruitment.
And the clubs at a lower level who are using some sort of scouting system or their own people, or are they getting paid money, these scouts? Are they getting...
Well, again, this goes back to the mythology of you know, clubs are using data and big data. Name names.
Right.
And I'm serious. Name names. And actually, you know, what we're talking about data, because data can be number of appearances. So know what you're actually measuring. And let's say, for example, if we do an analogy of the retail industry, they're using artificial intelligence to look at your purchasing trends and habits and future predictions. That doesn't exist in football. Probably the nearest I think we're seeing is City and Liverpool that's using some AI. So what you'll see in League Two clubs, I know one League Two club is paying their scouts £20 a match.
£20?
Yeah. So you'd earn more by working in the bar at the ground. It would be below minimum wage. So, and actually, look at his face.
And
also, so they want to talk football finance. So of course...
They're not getting 45p a mile, presumably, at that level.
No.
So they're 20 quid.
20 quid, yeah. There's another League Two club, two I know, that have got nothing at all. Nothing, no information coming in whatsoever, either on the opposition or actually emerging talent. And that then kicks the fold about, actually, what are you doing as a business? Because surely if you're a League Two club, you want a 19-year-old playing week in, week out. I've just returned from Norway doing some coach education work there. Watched the cup final, and there's two left-backs. Oh, sorry, two 20-year-olds playing week in, week out. They're more likely to come over and play in the Premier League than a under-21 at Crystal Palace, that's never going to get a game.
I want to bring Kieran here, because obviously we've got a lot of questions. I'm sure Kieran's got questions for you as well. Kieran, is it possible to quantify at the highest level how much an agent, how much a scout does financially for a club in terms of... You know, compared to bringing players through from the academy, compared to massive transfer deals that are driven by agents, can you put a figure on what a scout might do financially for a club?
I don't think you can do it for an individual scout. I think what you can do is look at the arc of a player's career. What did he cost? What did they sell him for? What were his wages? And compare that to other clubs of a similar stature. Even in the Premier League, because most of the clubs are now losing money in the Premier League, that they are trying to get value. And if you take a look at what has been happening in scouting, every £20 million plus transfer that took place this summer was for a player under 24, I think with the exception of Harry Maguire, who's 26. So going, I think you were talking to Darren earlier with regards to the some of the conflicts at Palace, that the manager wants older players, experienced players, the Steve Parrish wants younger players. Well, that's not just Palace. That is practically every club now in the Premier League. You go through that list of of players who are being recruited, and it's all, these are commodities, as we've discussed that before, who we can move on at a profit. If you then take a look at the loan market, and the loan market's increased substantially over the course of the last 5 years, what you're tending to see there is two types. That's going to be the young players who aren't quite good enough for the first team, trying to get them some exposure with the opportunity potentially selling them on, or the first team players who you've got a new manager's come in, doesn't like the look of him, he's 27, 28, player doesn't want to go necessarily because he's on good wages, so we've shifted him out to a club in another division. So the scouts are looking at both of those, but who discovered Trent Alexander-Arnold at Liverpool? You know, whoever did that has done a fantastic job. Whoever scouted Andrew Robertson and went to Liverpool and say, look, he's playing for Hull, and your first reaction is, well, you know, if you'd spoken to a Liverpool fan, you know, I work in Liverpool, when they first signed him, why are we signing a fullback from Hull? The scout's done his job. You know, Andrew Robertson's now a 40, 50 million pound fullback.
So that scout who brings Andrew Robertson to Liverpool from Hull, and then you've got a player that's probably added 50 million quid to his own transfer value, if not more. Would the scout get anything from that? Would there be a bonus? Would they say, thank you for bringing us this player?
It depends. I think in some of the bigger clubs, that would certainly be, you know, the place. If you put a scout on a commission only, then you're going to just get constant recommendation of rubbish. Just any player, because we need to get the commission. Actually, you then become the agent.
Right.
But you're right. There's no real, overall, there's no reward or retention model that's in place. I almost booted you then with some of the things you were saying, because we've started to do that as a business now. So we've partnered with Hartree, and we're developing an artificial intelligence platform, and we're now looking historically at transfer patterns and trends. And one of our customer segments are the agents. So if you've got a 19-year-old that's played 72 league games, what can we project in terms of future mapping for his career? With one of the Premiership clubs we're working with at the minute, we're actually looking at scouting effectiveness. So how many matches has he gone to? How many recommendations has he made? What's his geographical reach? We're studying flight path reach. So we're trying to disrupt the whole industry, actually, by providing that information of what the clubs actually should really be doing.
And I imagine
a lot of the scouts, actually, truly, they exist unaccountable. Unaccountable.
So I guess you can't be popular in the scouting industry, because the scouts won't like you coming in and suggesting to clubs that there are ways that you can measure their effectiveness. Because
Agreed. Some of the older guard, you know, the flat cap guys and the pencil and paper ones. I mean, you know, very few clubs are on cloud storage. Very few clubs are actually generating database and putting those reports into systems other than what the commercial provider gives in terms of a standard template. But actually, we want to make you look good. So the customers that we've got is we get our reports through to you very quickly, so that you can act and make decisions. But the information on that we give is who makes the decision. You do. We don't do the decision making on who's signed. We're just going to do profiles, analytics, qualitative assessments to help you make a better rounded choice. So actually, it's a value add. Every club wants to improve its scouting network. So it either wants to go to Croatia and it can't do it. In some of the League Two instances, a manager just wants coverage, so we can just, you know, try and slip in to provide that information in a, you know, like I say, in a Netflix way. So my analogy would be: you want Game of Thrones, no problem, mate, 11 million, or pay $7.99 a month. You can watch it in the privacy of your own home, pause it when you want, stop it when you want, go to it when you want, and nobody else knows. And that's the model that we're trying to, and it's significantly more cost effective.
Now, this is a subject. An awkward subject that we have touched upon in the pod tangentially sometimes. And that's the sort of, not underhand, the backhand, if you like. You've heard about a kid in Poland, for example, and you've got three clubs that you know about this kid in Poland. Are scouts out there talking to the kids' parents, offering them money, offering them trips, offering them cars?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
Is that legal, ethical?
No. As you know, no, it's not. I think you're bringing in a bigger and broader issue about governance. So the Premier League at the moment can't seem to get a chief exec in. And money makes the world go round. So we know that the transfer spends this year were greater than last year, although it's you know, I think it was 1.34 billion last year, but it's increased. But it's a few that are doing the most. And actually, one could argue that it's more beneficial to some individuals to do an overseas deal than bring a youth player through, because there's no transfer fee and there's a less of a negotiation in terms of that player's wage. It could even be arbitrary of, you know, you're an under 23 and you're going into the first team group, this is our standard wage structure. And as we've seen with examples that Kieran's, you know, eloquently provided in previous weeks, is that individuals can benefit with that, particularly with an overseas move. Money can maybe get hidden. But ultimately, the loser's the football club.
The way you describe it, it's like scouting isn't fully integrated into the club. It's like you've got the Venn diagram of everything, and then somewhere sort of floating around it, according to what club, is the scouting system.
So I agree with you. So our start point at Birmingham was that all our scouts had to watch our 23s and 18s. So my pathway really into player recruitment was when I was 18 and I got released from Hull City. Because if I'd worked it out, they had four centre-halves in contract when I started, so I was never going to get taken on, particularly in the days of only one sub. So our start point is that for every player that comes into a football club, you're affecting at least two people. Mm-hmm. That's the player that's got the shirt, maybe the player that's the reserve, but most importantly, the player that's in the pathway. And interestingly, I would argue that the two clubs that have benefited from the success of actually regulations being placed against them was Birmingham when we were there. Carson Young was in prison. We couldn't do anything in the transfer market. Right, we better start bringing the kids through. So Wes Harding got through. Damari Gray got through. So actually, because of the infrastructure, now I would say that that's the case now at Chelsea. Interestingly, Lampard may walk into more problems because he's got the transfer market spends and he's got some money to go and wag around. So expectation goes up. But suddenly also, back to Kieran's point earlier, the clubs go back to immediacy. Let's go and get the 27, like all the Roy Hodgson, 27-year-old, he's in the team on Saturday, my job's on the line, mate. I haven't got time for him to develop.
That's it. And also, because part of the scout's job, as you mentioned, is to look at opponents for upcoming games, although surprisingly some clubs don't do that at all. No. So are you paid for that on an individual match basis, or is that a favour? Is it
no? We're doing some opposition assessment with a League One club at the minute, and we do a mixture of things. You're right in what you say in terms of there is now a shift away from live scouting for opposition scouting. So particularly with Premier League, there's around about seven cameras at the ground. So you know, Maguire's marking day at a corner, look me head up, and you've missed two of the runners. You can't get that live scouting. You've got to put your hand up. Whereas you can. The analyst can pause it, they can rewind it, they can put computers on it. There are a number of systems that go, Shaqiri puts the ball in here and Robertson puts the free kicks in there. And the computer systems can do that far better than the human element. And we've recognised that as a business. However, at the minute, you can't manage emotion. So for all the scouts that had gone at the stadium alight when I was still there, the crowd are on the back. And at the moment, data cannot measure that. You know, who leads, who cajoles, who's the influencer, who tracks runners, who passes on. So we'll actually look on that side of things. And similarly, what a lot of the commercial providers do with the video provision that they do is that it's a broadcast feed, so they're missing critical information. So, you may miss shape change. And we study that. You know, they started 4-2-3-1, finished a 4-4-2 or 4-5-1. So we're providing our client club closure strategies. So in other words, if you're winning, this is how they're going to close the game. If they're losing, this is how they're going to close the game. So they can come up with a contingency. But if you're up the road after 76 minutes, you're not able to do that, are you?
Does a scout get involved in personal details, character deal? Are you assessing a player's character, or is it purely their technical ability?
Again, not like Kieran when you asked him the first question, he didn't answer it. you can do, and I think that where the UK market favours that, like for example, when we took Shea Adams, Shea come from Ilkeston, which is 9 miles away from where I live. You can get on the phone, you can have a ring around, and we know for us the fourth most important key pillar stone in signing a player was ability. The first one was character.
The fourth was
the
ability.
Fourth, yeah. But why go measure that? So, because the first thing is character and cultural fit, which would be the same for you with an audition, right?
Yeah.
I
don't audition. Thank you very much. I've had an extra. The fourth is ability.
Yeah, for us. Fulham, for example, and Brentford may operate a statistical model. So theirs would be more KPI and objective driven. So that could be number one. But with Gary Rowett and my own personal philosophies, it was character. Can he come into, you want, one of the big things in a football club, the most important thing for me is morale. It's like a public service sector. If you're in the MOD, then you need morale amongst the troops, first and foremost. So it's a slog, Saturday, Tuesday. So you need to understand the cultural fit and what culture are we trying to create. So forget that he's the best player. If it's, like when West Ham moved Arnautović on, it's like if he's an arsehole, we don't want him in the dressing room, do we? So forget his ability. unless you feel that he's got something that's totally outstanding and we're going to have to tolerate and manage that, which is very much the Maverick style of he can do something that the rest of us can't, fellas.
But that's all down to your instinct, though. If you're talking about character, that's down to... You can't measure what he's like as a personality.
Well,
again, he's just coming back to asking.
No, but that's where... Actually, the scout is valuable, because I think that the scout, you know, will be at matches. They pick things up on a grapevine. They hear stories. You know, and I think that what you... Like, as an example, you use a Polish example. That scout on the ground, I went to watch a Polish winger, and we'd been... It was an end-stage assessment, actually, for the club. And we'd been told that the Polish winger, you know, wanted to come to the club, heard of the club, heard of the region... passionate about coming, fluent in English, so I insisted on meeting him. And the reality was that, you know, he couldn't speak a word, never heard of us, and his girlfriend was pregnant and she couldn't speak English either. So you've got to sound people by people first, surely. That's how you point people into what your listeners will be working in the real world, is will they fit in, and most importantly, will they be happy? Because if they're happy, they'll play better.
I have to admit, Kieran, the reason Poland was in my mind, because we were talking about it in the pub 10 minutes ago. But I'm intrigued that you say... I insisted on meeting him, as though that's unusual.
It can be. Absolutely. Players can be signed without even being greeted and signed off video. Just off video. Like the clips, he looks a good player. Do you know what? He's right price point. We'll take a punt and we'll take a gamble on it. And actually, and I'm sure Kieran would agree this, the majority of player recruitment's mismatched. You know, a lot of players come in and it just doesn't work. And particularly at Premiership clubs, they can get lost in the building because they've got big squads. You know, it's a foreign name, so it's sexy. But the reality is who's holding these scouts accountable? Because or the recruitment departments? Because the reality is it's on Hodgson's shift. You know, that's the reality. Is if the Crystal Palace or Brighton scouting and recruitment department are putting that player in, that Graham Potter's got to suffer the legacy because it's the fans that are booing, calling for his head. And you say, "Man, hang on a minute, bring them in. I've got to play him." And that has happened. I've seen that happen.
So, Kieran. If we're talking about the scout, you've got four levels and abilities, the bottom one. For some clubs, is economics the only criteria in terms of... Are they going to look at a player and go, fine, he's between £5 and £7 million, we'll take him and we can afford that risk?
They will, because ultimately they're driven by the finance director and then they're driven by FFP. So that's going to be a factor. And then, from a fan's point of view, the first thing that all the fans will do is they'll go onto YouTube and look at his YouTube clips, and they will form an opinion. And on the back of that, he becomes a good or a bad player. And then six weeks later, we've signed some turkeys at Brighton, but they came in on £15 million fees. Mm. And on the back of that, they actually get far longer to prove themselves to be turkeys. Whereas if you've got a young player coming through who, you know, we've signed him from Ilkeston Town for £20,000, stick him in the first team... If he doesn't impress the fans within 10 minutes, then he's out on his ear. So I think that the fee does give people time, because that fee has to be justified. Whereas if it's a youth team player, or if it's coming from non-league or a lower league, then you say, oh, well, it was just an experiment, we can get rid of him quickly.
When we talked about EPPPP, PEPs, yeah. You mentioned, sort of in passing, you mentioned the effect that would have on young players and scouting. Would that economically affect a smaller club and a scouting system?
This episode of The Price of Football is brought to you by the AI-powered workspace Notion. We are living in an era of information overload and we have more knowledge than ever before. But what do we do with it all? If you're in Notion, you put that knowledge to work.
It's a workspace designed not just for making progress, but getting inspired. And all I can say on a personal level is, for somebody whose life is quite chaotic and I'm writing pieces for government and newspapers and media content, I've got my university commitments and I'm supposed to be writing a book, I use Notion all the time because it brings order into chaos.
Well, if you need order brought to your chaos, you can try Notion for free when you go to notion.com/priceoffootball. That's all lowercase letters, notion.com/priceoffootball, and start turning your ideas into action. That's notion.com/priceoffootball.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, Or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
Well, yeah, from a small club's point of view, what's the point of scouting young kids if you're going to get £3,000 for a really promising 9 or 10 year old? And following the show where we talked about EPPB, Nicola Palios, who's at Tranmere, and her husband Mark is effectively the owner of Tranmere. She said on LinkedIn, "We agree entirely. It's been an absolute disaster for lower league clubs, because what's the benefit to us if we get a good player? Then potentially we're going to lose them at 16 for peanuts. We don't even get the opportunity to put them into the first team, because the larger clubs will have spotted them, and they can just hoover them up for minimal cost."
Darren, we do have other stories to talk about, and I hope you'll stay while we do that. But just one final question. In 20 years' time, will clubs still have human being scouts?
That's a really good question. I think that the provision will certainly be reduced. We're moving fast with AI, digital tech, apps, mobiles, to much of the frustration of myself and my own children. So I think that breadth of information is getting broader, and also the level of pressure for immediate decisions is coming through. So we still have live fans.
Whoa.
So ultimately. I think that I would like to think so, but certainly in opposition assessment now we're seeing much, much less in terms of live scouting. And in time, with even some of the stuff where we were in talks with the European Space Agency around player tracking at this moment in time. So you're looking at,
really?
Kevin's eyebrows have just gone up yet again.
Because what we want is, you want that level of accuracy with the information that we've got. We've got to be disruptive as a business. We've got to provide a service that the clubs haven't got, and we've got to provide it at a price point that makes it an absolute no-brainer for them to do it. But I think that, back to Kieran's point, for the youngster to get through, you've got to start somewhere. And ultimately, I think that I've got this altruistic drive, really, that, you know, if a Sunday league team gets it right, you know, don't play, don't train, you don't train, don't play. Try that in the Premiership. We're all in it together. Go for a beer afterwards. Take your headphones off and let's have a chat and have a sing-song on the bus. And the kids have to start somewhere, and there is no data that's measuring the under-9s and under-10s. And actually, you know, get lost in the love of the game, and hopefully your talent's then recognised in doing that. So ultimately, you may see the scouts spending time at a much, much younger provision, but our coverage is certainly getting much, much greater on a global pursuit. And the clubs generally don't care about the national game. They're in it to win. They're in it to win, and they're in it to survive.
I'm really pleased to hear somebody on this show use the phrase "love of the game," because sometimes, Kieran, we're talking about such difficult subjects, you forget there are those of us who love the game, and Darren's been brilliant, which has left us with not as much time as I'd hoped for the smaller stories, but the other stories. But not brilliant news for either Macclesfield fans or Bolton fans. Bolton fans probably thought they'd had a calmer time of it lately, but it's all kicked off again, isn't it?
Yeah, there's issues. We've had the latest administrator's report, and that was pretty damning in respect of the old regime, that somebody got a £236,000 payoff when Bolton were sold. And the trouble is, the administrators are charging £350 an hour for the privilege of running the club over the summer. So Bolton are ticking along.
An hour? £350 an hour?
Yep.
So for 24 hours, or they're just there 8 hours a day?
That's just their 8 hours a day.
Not Liverpool Uni.
Okay.
So in respect to Bolton, yeah, it hasn't looked good, and that's put the pressure on. I mean, the only good news in respect to Bolton was that their next points deduction has effectively been suspended for 18 months in respect of the fixture which they unilaterally postponed before the new owners came in.
Yeah, because there was talk that the EFL were going to impose that extra 5 point. So why have they decided not to?
I think they feel that Bolton have been sufficiently punished, and what they are doing with the suspension is that they're saying to the new owners, you're on probation. And you know, you've now got to justify your position as custodians of the club, and we want this will give us some form of certainty that you're going to run it properly, and if you're not, you're going to get a further points deduction. And actually, this could actually hurt Bolton to a greater extent, because the points deduction that they have already is effectively made them relegated to League Two. Mm-hmm. If this kicks in League Two next season, that's actually going to be worse for than having an additional points deduction this year.
It was interesting. I saw the Bolton chief executive say that. Not only did she not blame other clubs for trying to persuade the EFL to impose the extra 5-point deduction, that she would have done the same thing if it was another club was in trouble, because she said it's a dog-eat-dog world, which is quite philosophical but also quite disappointing, isn't it?
It's exactly the same that we saw in respect of Bury. There's a self-interest element that if now there's only one club being relegated to the National League, well, if I'm in the bottom six come Easter, then I've got a one in six chance of going down instead of a one in three chance going down. So you do the maths. And there is such a big difference between the National League and League Two, because you lose the Premier League solidarity payments, which are worth about $800,000 a year.
Oh, as much as that?
Yeah.
That's interesting. And what's the latest on Macclesfield? Because it doesn't sound brilliant, does it?
Well, Macclesfield's match was effectively unilaterally postponed at the weekend because the players yet again haven't been paid. You've got a club owner that appears to only contact people at Macclesfield via WhatsApp. He doesn't put in an appearance himself. He has also spoken earlier this week with regards to, yes, I'm in talk with interested parties, but we hear that so often in respect of so many clubs. You never know whether he's just trying to fob off people or whether there's a genuine interest. Macclesfield loses money every year like all clubs in the lower league. So what's the attractiveness to somebody coming in? I live fairly close to Mac. And I've been there as both watch in the home and the away end. It's a great thing from a fan's point of view, but there's no money to be made in it. So why would you invest?
Now, I was going to say abroad, because it is abroad technically, it's a different country. I've got approximately 300 plus cousins, first cousins, various relations in Ireland, all of whom love football. But the very top of the Irish game is having problems. The FA of Ireland, they've had the auditors in basically, haven't they? That's the report hasn't been particularly lucky for the Irish, is it?
Yeah. The chief executive of the FAI, he left, was encouraged to leave. I think his name's John Delaney. Mm-hmm. And this was being live streamed. The auditor's report was effectively being live streamed on RTE. This is such a big issue. Clearly with a name like mine, my mum's in Mayo, my sister's in Dublin, and my dad's farm's in Tipperary. So.
I'm from Donegal. I was 25 before I was made aware of the existence of other counties in Ireland.
Sounds about right. The FAI is broke. What the auditor said is that we don't know how much money you've lost because you've not actually kept any records. It's the equivalent of writing things down on the back of a fag packet and then dropping it in a waste paper bin. So nobody knows just how much the FAI have lost, but the banks are now saying, well, we've lent you money on the basis that we thought that you could repay us. So they're having second thoughts. The sponsors are all having second thoughts. There was a story which came out a couple of months ago that the Irish under-21s, I think they were playing in Eastern Europe at the time, and they had to take four different flights via Ryanair because they couldn't afford to charter a flight themselves. Mm. And then at the top of the game, you've got the manager and the assistant leaving last year with a £1.7 million payoff. £1.7 million payoff, which is effectively £1.7 million these days. But it's pretty horrendous. There's a lack of governance. There's a lack of accountability. As usual, it's the suits looking after the suits and the players and the under-21s are being treated very poorly.
And are there possible sanctions then against the Irish national team? I mean, if they fail to meet certain legislative requirements?
Well, if they fail to fulfil a fixture, if they fail to give the appropriate money to away teams when they come and things of that nature, then there could be UEFA-led sanctions. It does look as if the FAI potentially could be just broken up and a replacement body brought in. So I took a look at the accounts and I took a look at the small print, and they had about 30 or 40 directors or the equivalents, which is similar to the way that the FA runs here. You've got somebody who's from the Dorset FA, and you've got there from all the counties, all the individual areas. Why are these people not holding the board to account? Mm. It just appears to be an old boys network, and it's embarrassing what's happened there. The first team will survive, but yeah, somebody's now have to go and buy the cones because the FAI can't afford to buy them themselves, and that's pretty embarrassing.
Darren, do countries have a scouting system? I mean, would somebody like Ireland have people like you looking out for the classic cliche of somebody with an Irish grandfather who's playing for a league?
Yeah, it does happen. Yeah, certainly within the English FA, they've got like a talent ID department, and they will be looking at age group football and obviously identifying where's the best under 14, under 15s. You know, the administrative departments, like you described, can be looking at heritage and that tracking. And then our proposition would be, you know, certainly for a senior point of view, you need to monitor form. Who's on form? You know, so it's quite easy if you're for England, you've got match of the day and premiership and mm-hmm. and that side of things. But for some of the smaller nations, the countries like, because we've just been in Scandinavia, they're exporting countries. So their senior players are actually playing abroad. In a number of countries, so therefore you need to track and follow your players that way. But then you need to, obviously then, going back to the human factors, when they come in, it's about galvanisation. It's about a spirit and a morale. And like when we saw when Denmark won the Euros in the 80s, that can be much, much more, you know, as a driver over the actual, you know, the sum of its individual parts.
Now, Kit, the big football news last week, obviously, was Amazon. The coverage was well received, but even the BBC said it was very well broadcast. And my favourite fact being they offer you can either listen to the match commentary or turn it off and have Match Atmos.
Yes.
But for the Arsenal-Brighton game, there was a caption saying Match Atmos not available, which obviously
what do you mean? There was not.
Which is probably maybe somebody at Amazon's own joke. But in terms of finance, I know you've told me in the past that Amazon are very, very cagey about revealing numbers. I hear their numbers were better than expected, but do we know what the take-up was for the subscription service?
Well, no, I mean, Amazon gives away absolutely nothing. And also the Premier League wouldn't even give away officially the fee that's been paid, but what I'm hearing is it's $30 million a year for 3 years.
Why would they not reveal the fee then? What's
Amazon, that they just have a lockdown when it comes to all numbers. I mean, it's estimated that Amazon have 9 million Prime customers in the UK and Netflix have 15 million. Now, from Amazon's point of view, it was the perfect opportunity to get people into the ecosystem and sign up. And because you've got the two sets of fixtures, you've got last week's, which was spread over three nights, and it worked well. There were some grumbles about lag, but I get Now TV rather than Sky because I get a Now TV season ticket, and I can't be bothered with all the rest of the nonsense on Sky. And there's lag on that. So I think the criticism which was coming in and lag happened to be from certain newspapers who owners might have been connected to a certain TV channel indirectly or directly. But the Premier League seemed very, very happy with, anecdotally, with the viewing figures, which are higher than those of Sky, because, surprise, surprise, if you get something for free, people will watch it. I think it'll be interesting to see how many people will actually then sign up at the end of the 30 days, because they'll have the 9th and the 10th of December fixtures, and then they'll have had the fixtures for Boxing Day and the couple of days after. What you will find is that if you have signed up for the 30-day free trial, Amazon will be carpet bombing you during that period with, you know, here's a fantastic deal. You know, if you want to see this again, and I think they've been the anecdotal evidence is that the viewing figures are good, and they're pleased with them, and that they had one or two teething problems which they reckon they can work out in due course.
Well, because Palace Bournemouth was the first game, and it was to the credit of the director that they managed for 5 minutes to cut away from the banner at the Homesdale end saying Amazon and the Premier League selling kickoff times to the highest bidder. But they factor in the fact that quite a few people will forget to unsubscribe, don't they? Isn't it part of their financial model?
Oh, yeah, and it works every time. I mean, any subscription model is based on, until you go and check your bank balance and you see, I've just gone and spent another $79.99 on an annual subscription, and once you're tied into that, that's the end of it.
Can I just throw in, as I say, I've been in Norway, the incredible global reach of the Premier League. So, the fans are a little bit knocked, it's a late kickoff, but if it suits a different market sector. We did a Q&A at a public venue, and on the two floors, the Premiership was shown live. It was standing room only. Really? It was nuts. And you know, I think Kieran mentioned, is it about £800 spend of a Norwegian in Liverpool or £1,000? So actually, the clubs, particularly the Premiership clubs and breakaway type leagues, is that, you know, they're looking at the global value of football now, and they'll put it on at a time to suit the global market, which comes at the cost and the expense of the local fan.
Well, that ties in almost uncannily, and I promise you this wasn't organised, but one of the questions we had is from Rose, and I apologise if I'm pronouncing that incorrectly. He's a Tranmere fan, and he actually asked about the whether you could put a figure on what we were talking about earlier, on football tourism. So he said they've got a big Norwegian and Dutch fan base. So how much would the club be benefiting? Because you'd imagine it's not that much, is it, for a club that's Tranmere size?
The clubs themselves don't benefit significantly. The local economy does. And I think what Mark Palios has done very well is that he is selling Tranmere as part of Merseyside, and he's selling it on the back of Liverpool, the Beatles, come and see Tranmere as well. And then the Tranmere have been really smart, because they've just had foreign investors from Indonesia buy a 15% stake in the club on the back of that as a marketing tool.
Well, one final question, and again, it's about global sport, essentially. Johan has asked, we talked at length about the Americans investing in Man City. He said, is that an indication that football in the US is also seriously on the up as well, that the MLS will be getting bigger? And also, he talked about, at the moment, something about 80% of the MLS income is through turnstiles, and that will change, presumably?
That's right. The MLS TV deal is worth around about $90 million. Now, if you think about that $90 million is what Amazon have paid for 3 years,
yeah,
here in the UK to get Premier League rights, which have got global appeal. The reason why Silver Lake paid so much money for Manchester City is that they see a rise in the value of TV rights for the MLS, for the Chinese Super League, and for the Indian Super League as well. And they don't see necessarily a huge amount of growth in Premier League revenues, because we've reached saturation point. The present deal is going down by 10% domestically, but that there's still overseas appeal. And they believe that New York City could become the preeminent MLS club, and on the back of that, if you start to just notch up those broadcasting rights, they won't reach the same levels as the NFL or the NBA, but there is certainly opportunity for growth there.
And I think it's a feather in our cap that literally the day after we spoke about the Indian Football League market, Man City bought into a team out there, didn't they?
That's right. I think Mystic Mag is my new name.
That's right. Listen, thank you for listening, everybody. We have run out of time because Durham in particular was so fascinating. The Price of Football is a Dap Dip production. We recorded here at the Comedy Store in Soho, in central London, my spiritual home. And I've been asked to say this, and I say it reluctantly because I'm not a natural salesman, but if you could leave us a 5-star review on whatever platform you listen to our app on, that would help some kind of algorithm thing, and it could even lead us eventually to getting some sort of fee or a travel card. Who knows? So thank you for listening, and we'll see you again next week.
The Price of Football. Price of Football.